Recorded Books presents an unabridged recording of The Holland Suggestions by John Dunning. Narrated by Jack Garrett.
Chapter 1. Two separate forces, long since banished from my life and buried, returned that fall to put the nightmare in motion. Naturally, at first I tried to push it away, but once it started, there was no stopping it. Judy brought her pressures to the conscious element. My subconscious did the rest. Before I could begin to understand it, I was drawn in and found no way to go but straight ahead to the end of it. Judy's part, limited as it was, provided the initial impetus. It was Judy who first began to ease my mind, then jolted it into that early critical examination of my past. Though she never asked specifically about the Holland experiments, her interest in her mother was tied directly to the time when Robert Holland and I were taking those long dips into my id. Either I was too blind to see it in its early stages, or my subconscious had screened it out the way psychologists say it sometimes does for self-protection. Later, it became too obvious to ignore. The beginning was probably sometime after Judy's 14th birthday, and I began to notice it the following year. Suddenly, I saw that she was experimenting and learning many things about her mother from my reactions to her experiments. She's quite a kid, Judy. She looks so much like her mother that I am still startled when she enters a room without warning. Judy has always looked more like Vivian than me. I guess that's her blessing, but it leaves me a strange feeling of sadness and discontent to carry into my middle life. Dull pain, bone deep, that you can never find and snuff out completely. Judy helped bring part of that to the surface. Teenage girls are a joy. They seem to develop overnight. Now they're kids, and soon there are breasts and curves, and they're testing the old man's reaction to all the artificial lures of womanhood. Judy tried them all, and I let her do it, with one exception, until it had run its course. The exception was orange lipstick. I just hated that, and I told her so. But Judy has always been a sane kid, and I know she would have abandoned it in a week or so anyway. She settled on a subdued makeup that was almost a replica of Vivian's. How she arrived at it, I couldn't then guess. But she was developing an amazing instinct for her mother's taste. I thought it had to be instinct because I knew, wrongly, that she never got any clue to Vivian's character from me. We never talked to Vivian beyond the fact that she had lived and had once been my wife and was Judy's mother. I didn't know where Vivian was, and I had no interest in knowing. I should pause a minute. I've just caught myself in a lie, and if this is to have any value, I guess it should be done without all the little ego-saving games that people always play. In fact, Vivian has always been the most fascinating woman in my life. I would have suppressed my interest in her then, but deep inside me, it has never waned. Vivian has affected my relationships with other women through the years, the most recent being my secretary, Sharon Wells. Sharon blames Judy for that, perhaps with good reason, but Judy was merely the manifestation of Vivian. Vivian has always been my millstone. I still do not feel at ease talking about her or even thinking about her, beyond those flashes that have passed through my mind several times a day for 15 years. So when I first noticed Judy's strong resemblance to her mother, when it became so strong that I could not ignore it anymore, I began to watch her growth with a morbid brand of depressed fascination. I was eager to write it off as simple mother-to-daughter physical heredity. Now I find my lack of insight into the needs of my growing daughter terrifying. Early in her life, Judy sensed my inhibitions about Vivian and constructed inhibitions of her own. My hang-up fed her fantasies, and in a different way, Vivian became the most fascinating woman in Judy's life, too. With her only weapon, her looks, she fought my reluctance to discuss it. With an utter lack of material to go on, Judy reconstructed her mother's image for me. It was a slow process of trial and error, but when I first saw her in one of those 1950s sweaters with her lips touched a pale pink and the hair that she always wore in a bun flowing out behind her, my reaction must have gratified her. I dropped my drink down the front of my shirt. She refined the image slowly, adding and subtracting touches here and there. But never again did she catch me so unprepared as she had that first time. Gradually, I learned to live with the fact that Vivian, in the person of our daughter, whom I also loved very much, had come back to me. When she wasn't being Vivian, Judy was going through all the perils of adolescence. Boys flocked around, and she was in and out of love more times than I thought possible in a school year. We had some very frank talks that year, the kind that most girls have with their mothers, but I think I handled them well. I strived for an open, honest relationship built on mutual respect, and it seemed complete in every aspect, except where Vivian was concerned. Judy's spirit is strong, but her mind is reasonable. I could always guide her, but never boss her. And I think she knew that, though she never put it to a test. My strongest influence over her will always be the value she places on my respect. I hope I can keep that forever, though I have to admit I have occasionally abused it. The Vivian problem seemed to be our only serious hang-up. I saw to it that Judy understood about sex at an early age. Yet I never failed to marvel at how much solid information she picked up on her own. Street-level sex education in action. When she turned 16, I suspected that she was going deeper into sexual experimentation than I wanted her to be, and the object of my suspicion, a pimply right guard on the football team, was hardly the man you always hope your daughter will someday bring home. I suspected he was into pot, a rumor I picked up third hand through the parental grapevine. But I found out how reliable the grapevine was when half the varsity football team was arrested for marijuana possession, and Judy's pizza-faced hero was not among them. When the cops came crashing through the door, he and Judy were at the movies. Naturally, she dropped him just as my doubts were beginning to subside.
This work is copyrighted 1975 by John Dunning. This recording is copyrighted 2001 by